This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 194 of Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. I'm recording live from the Aria Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada for the 2018 Navigator Conference, and I am currently in the vendor hall at booth 110. And, you know, this is the second official day of the conference. However, it's the last day of the exhibitor hall. So people are going to be packing up here pretty soon. It's about 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. And they just had lunch. This place was completely packed. And now it's not because people are going to classes now. And, there's just a couple hours left, and then this will be done here for this conference. This episode is presented by the IAED, as well as sponsored by Kim Turner LLC, and that's Professional Dispatch Training for the Next Generation of 911. Make sure to check them out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as thekimturner.com. And as always, we are supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So my guest today is Lynn, and she's a dispatch supervisor with Westcom Emergency Communications out of Iowa. How's it going?
Good.
All right. Excellent. Still nervous?
God, yes.
No.
I think my heart rate matches my episode number right now.
Nice. 194. Excellent. So how have you been doing here? I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on since this started. Some people got here on Saturday. Others got here, like myself, on Monday. When did you get here?
I flew in on Monday.
On Monday as well? And did you flew in early in the morning or?
It was afternoon. I think I got here about 1:30 or so.
So you were the smart one, unlike me, who I got here way, way early. But thank the Lord my room was actually available. I thought I was going to be getting here because I got here around 7 o'clock. And I paid for the early check-in, but it was supposed to be at 11 a.m. And I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do? And then I remembered, well, I'm in Vegas, so I can hit up some slots or something. But
when
I checked in, they said, we've got your room ready already. And I thought, I'm going to go and just relax because I know there's a lot of other stuff that I'm going to have to do once I get in here. So that's awesome. So how's your experience been here at this conference? Is this your first Navigator conference?
It is. My boss is here too. He sent me a text message and said, how are you liking it? And the only thing I could say was, wow. This has been such a great experience. I'm so glad to be here.
That's excellent. Sweet. So yeah, I mean, stuff like this, you get to come to it. You get to network with tons of people that come from the same background as you. You've got all types of sessions and stuff that you get to sit in on. So far, what has been one of the most maybe eye-opening or, you know, intriguing things that you've been doing or one of the sessions since you've been here?
I really like the session on mental health. Mm-hmm. It kind of brought away or took away like the stigmas and just taught the facts.
Right.
And which it doesn't seem like that when you're in the center, because the mental health calls have increased and you're hearing about them all the time, but it's not like that in real life. And so it helps to remember that, you know, there's not a million crazy kids out there that are all disrespecting their parents.
Right.
We just happen to hear about them more.
Right. Exactly. Now, you were here as well because you did a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get to that here shortly, but I want to know more about you. How did you get into dispatching to begin with? Because you're a dispatch supervisor, but you're fairly new going into this position. So how did you start out and how long have you been doing it?
I started in 2009. I went to Iowa State University and I worked at their police department as a dispatcher. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I kind of wanted to use it to get my foot in the door to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I found my calling. Here I am instead.
It's funny, you know, there are actually a lot of people who say that, you know, they wanted to get their foot into the door of law enforcement or, you know, anything else by going through dispatch. But then once they really get into it, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, I got the bug or, you know, I found out it was a calling and I've really been into it. So,
and it's like, I don't know how many people I've met that I work with or have met who do this, where you can ask them, what did you want to be when you grew up? A dispatcher. Mm-hmm. It's not on anyone's radar.
Right, exactly.
It really isn't, but I'm really glad I fell into it. I like it. I like the climate-controlled room that I get to sit in every day.
Well, that's funny because when I was in dispatch, we had no control over that. It was all always at like 64 degrees. It was freezing.
So I'm cold. So,
I was going to say, if you get a little bit of control, that's awesome for you and well done, Westcom.
I've got a lot of blankets.
Oh, excellent.
Stashed.
Okay. So do you have one of those Snuggies?
I at my last center, we had a like community Snuggie.
Did you really?
Which sounds pretty gross, and it probably was, but I was so cold, I didn't care.
Oh, that's funny. It's all passed on between different people, smelling like beef. And
yeah, it got washed occasionally.
Oh, that's funny stuff. So you didn't have any background at all going into it? No public safety, no relatives in public safety
family,
or anything?
No family, nothing.
So all green.
What really started me into it was... in high school, I got the bug that I wanted to be a detective when I grew up.
Oh.
I like figuring shit out.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to do. Well, I take my first college class on criminal justice, and day one, they say, you know, there's no such thing as growing up to be a detective. You don't just get to be a detective. You have to be a police officer.
Right.
And then work that way. So I'm like, okay, that's still my end goal. I'll be a cop instead.
Right.
Like, work my way there. Mm-hmm. So that's where I started with getting into criminal justice and law enforcement and all that. And then I went to community college for my first 2 years. And then when I went up to ISU, I applied for their police department. And I had actually forgotten that I even applied by the time I got the call back.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. So you were that into dispatch and stuff that it just kind of went out the other side.
Well, it just had been like 6 months or so.
Uh-huh.
And like I was finding restaurant jobs and odds and ends just to, you know, pay rent while I was up there. And I got the call back and I was like, I guess I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you in the beginning then? Did you do any sit-alongs? Did you go into dispatch and sit there to see what they do? Or you just jumped in?
I did. Day one, I had a trainer and one of the other trainers came up to me later after I was off training and said, mm-hmm. I don't know why you came back the next day. He scared the shit out of you. Like, I could see it in your eyes. Like, because I sat down and the first thing was, you know, officer safety. He was just hammering it in my head. Like,
right.
If you screw up, you will kill my friend. Like, oh, okay.
Shit.
Yeah. And then it was either my first shift or my second shift. It was right before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the term degloving because an old guy drove the wrong way on the interstate, the highway, and he had his face degloved.
Oh, man.
And so, in that moment, that was my kind of like, shit, can I do this?
You know, I don't think I've even heard that term.
Degloving?
Yeah.
Oh.
Damn.
Well, I think
now
kinda,
I know.
Yeah.
I know what it means now.
I've heard of like fingers, like, you know, people that worry about their rings getting caught on things and degloving their fingers. But no.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first experience was face.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't get to see it, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Right.
But yeah, this is day or two before Thanksgiving. And I'm like, this family just lost grandpa. Grandpa lost his face. Can I deal with this for the rest of my career?
Right. Exactly. So I've said this before, and I will continue to say it. It, out of all the people that I've spoken to doing this podcast, there has been that one call where someone learned something about themselves, questioned something, and it sounds like this one obviously was yours.
Yeah.
You know, am I actually going to be able to
do this
with this? I mean, that's, oh man, that's pretty crazy.
Showed up next day.
And you were there, you know.
And I haven't killed any of that trainer's friends.
Good. Yeah, showed you. So, you know, that's kind of like with the position that I have now, what I do within digital, we will sometimes have people come through that are getting into, you know, like computer science and coding and, you know, software engineering and stuff like that. And they want to see the types of stuff that we're doing in 911. And I've only done this once so far, and it's kind of funny because now that I think about it, I don't think we've had another class come back, but I think it's only because I've been traveling during that time, so there's probably been more there. I just haven't been the one to do the presentation. But what they wanted me to do was give them a tour. And then we went back to our training room and kind of talk about my background and where I come from dispatch and the stuff that we do there with text for 911 and everything else. So what I was telling them is, and I was being brutally honest, I said, everything that you do, if you end up becoming a software engineer or doing code or whatever for programs that help out 911 dispatchers or police officers or anything like that in public safety, you better make sure that you're coding that shit right, because you're going to kill someone. And I shared calls with them that I had taken before and, you know, talking about location accuracy and everything like that. Whatever you guys do, you better make sure you're doing it 110%, because we deal with lives here, and the stuff that we provide, the services that we provide, we help save lives and help the 911 dispatchers to do that. And they're all sitting there with their jaws dropped. And some of my coworkers are looking at me, and I looked at them and just kind of smiled and winked and like, yeah. But you know, I'm the same way. You know, sometimes you just got to be brutal with people, and they either stay or they don't. And you're here right now, and you've done it. You're now, you know, dispatch supervisor and stuff, and you're continuing. So that's awesome.
Yeah. We just had a girl who applied with us. She came and sat in, and another call taker sitting right near her, not with the person she was with, took back-to-back CPR calls. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Right.
I really hope that that didn't scare her away.
And is she still there?
I don't know if we've offered the jobs yet, but she was listed in, like, in the process.
I gotcha.
And so, yeah, so she hasn't even started yet, and this is what she sees.
Right. Like, well, you know,
I swear we don't do this all the time.
It's actually kind of good that something like that happened, because I've had people who'd come in to do a sit-along and nothing happens. You know, they go in for 2 to 4 hours and there's nothing that happens. And they say, oh, I can do this.
It's only like that when a cop's in the room.
Well, yeah, that too. Huh. Let's think about it. Was there an officer in there at the time? But yeah. It seems like that happens all the time. But the other cool thing is that when like the civilian academy comes in or whatever to see what all goes on in the sheriff's department. And when I was in dispatch at the central dispatch center, they would come in. And I would be showing them certain things, and then it would go to hell. And just the look on their face as they're watching everyone just were yelling stuff back and forth, sending each other messages, trying to eat, as well as take phone calls on the radio and doing all this stuff. And it feels good to be able to do all that and say, can you do that?
You know, look at that. To actually see us in action is just...
Right, because they have no idea.
You can't describe it.
Yeah.
You can't describe what it's like to be eating something while talking someone through CPR.
Exactly. Like, right.
You sound callous. You sound terrible, but I'm hungry.
Right. Yeah. And I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
But I was also eating at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've taken domestic calls where I was eating dinner and I'm like in squirrel mode where it's just all packed in my cheeks. And, you know, they could understand me, but yeah,
it's weird the things you get good at doing. Like,
right?
I'm good at pretending I'm a hamster.
Right, yeah, talking with a mouthful.
You would have no idea.
Oh, that's funny shit.
I'm hiding a Big Mac right now.
I can't even tell.
I can't even see it.
So you're starting out, you're getting through your training, but was it overwhelming at all at first when you first got in there to start taking calls, or did you just really feel like you had it?
I think I was eased into it. I was a little lucky because I started at the University Police Department, so we did not take wireless 911s.
Oh, okay.
The city would take those and pass them on. So we got the call after it kind of been figured out what was going on. It's our problem.
But you had a good intro into it, then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
I had kind of like the diet dispatch life to start with. And then we went on to...
I was just taking a swig of water when you said that. Oh, my God. That is funny. The diet.
Yes. So, and we took landline calls, but we were mostly busy with... I worked the night shift a lot because it was the most fun.
Oh,
but,
I love night shift. That was my shift to work.
The drunk kids. My favorite weekends to work were the first weekend of college, where all the freshmen don't know how to handle themselves yet.
Oh, right.
First weekend, drunkest weekend. And then ISU has this, used to have a party. It got banned because they had riots. But Visha was just this week-long. It was to celebrate the university, but a lot of people celebrated the death of their livers.
Oh, yes.
So.
You know, to kind of piggyback off of that, my favorite part of dispatch would be towards the end of school, a high school, and they would have all the senior parties. Mm-hmm. And I would have to call parents in the middle of the night to say, I'm sorry for waking you up in the middle of the night, but what's wrong with my child? What's wrong with my child? Your child's fine. They're just very intoxicated at such and such's house. We've got officers out there with them, and we need you to go pick them up. And a lot of the times, well, it was half and half. Either parents would be very happy that we called, mm-hmm. or you could hear the other parent in the background saying, what the F, you know, just going off.
Damn it,
what are they doing? Yeah, geez, can't believe this. And, you know, I'm biting my lip trying not to laugh because I'm thinking, you're in some shit now.
Yeah, I always hated those calls, though, because parents always had follow-up questions.
And, oh, God, I know.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm like, why isn't the officer doing this? Because they can answer these questions.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You got to go out there. I don't have any other information.
Yeah.
Or I would say, I've got another call coming in. If you just head out there, they'll give you that information and you'll be good to go. Because, you know, a lot of times there's none of that going on. There's nothing else going on mm-hmm. but the child waiting there with the officer. So, I mean, and of course, I don't have that information either. Just like you're saying, we don't have that information. They're just telling us to call them and have them go pick it up.
I don't know.
Yeah, I've got another call coming in. I don't know what to tell you.
Ring, ring. Oh, it's me.
Yeah, sorry about that. I got to go to the bathroom. How big is your agency?
I wish I knew the numbers off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. We have 5 suburban cities. I think we're number 5 in Iowa for call volume, which doesn't mean a whole lot either, I guess, to you. West Des Moines is our biggest user. They've got... Gosh, I don't even know. We've got like Wells Fargo. We've got Jordan Creek Mall. All these big, huge businesses that mm-hmm. we swell almost, if not double, our city size during the day.
Wow.
And then back to, you know, normal in the evenings.
Well, so how many dispatchers do you have on at a time?
We have minimums from 3 p.m. through, I guess, well, day shift, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. is 4. Afternoon shift, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. is 5. And then we go back to 4 from 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. And then we drop to 3 from 3 to 7.
Cool. That's kind of like my old PSAP. We would have 3 minimum throughout the week, but then on the weekend it'd be 4, sometimes 5 if we had a big event going on. So
yeah. We can up minimums for events and things like that. We try to be proactive. West Des Moines Police Department does what they call a DP day, mm-hmm. directed patrol. So every other Friday they have like their entire force on. And so they can let us know in advance if they have like a traffic project or something they're going
right.
to use up a lot of our resources for. And then we can staff extra for that.
Well, at least they let you know. We would go into dispatch sometimes and they would just tell us, oh, check it on for a traffic grant. Did any of you guys know that they were doing a traffic grant?
Oh, we get those.
Oh, no, we didn't. Oh, damn it.
Surprise. All right.
Everybody eat early because it's going to be it's going to be something. How about your first call? Do you remember your first call at all, or maybe some early calls or calls early on in your career?
Let's see. My first 911. So the city department, when I still worked at the university, mm-hmm. the city was down like 6 dispatchers for various reasons. And so they asked for help. And so I went over there and I was so excited. Like, I get to be a real dispatcher, which university people, you're real. I promise.
Yes.
You're real dispatchers too. But like the city, the whole city, I get to do this.
Yeah.
And I get to take in the first wireless 911 calls when before it was always transferred over.
Right.
So I wasn't EMD certified though. So I wasn't first on phones, mm-hmm. I was second. And then my city person I was working with had to use the restroom, so I was the only one in the room. Phone rings. I'm like, I get to do this, it's all mine.
Yay.
I answer, and they were like looking for the phone number for like a taxi.
Ah.
I'm like, this is my first one. I wasted it.
Yeah.
I wasted it on
all
you.
All of that excitement and everything. Damn
yeah.
it. We wasted the good surprise on you.
Yeah, exactly.
What was that? Big Daddy.
Big Daddy, yeah.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed. That's exactly what it felt like.
Oh, man. So then what about some of the calls earlier on in your career, or even maybe one that has stuck with you?
Let's see. It's always so hard to think off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Like when I listen to your podcast, I just think of all these stories that spark like, oh, I remember this. But off the top of my head, it's like... Shit, I know I've done some things. Let's see. I had fun, a fun-ish one. Mm-hmm. It was dispatcher fun, not real people fun. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, we had a caller. This was at, I've worked for three centers now. So this was one in the middle, was for the county. And we had this guy who had, I don't know what sort of mental health issue, but he was calling 911 nonstop all day. Like he would only sleep for a few hours in between and then keep calling and calling and calling.
Oh,
and
man.
The police department refused to go in and get him because they didn't really have a reason to. Like they got him once and he
right.
bailed right out of jail. So
and started doing it again, probably.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you can't just keep doing that and doing that and doing that. So the police department was like, well, we're not going to force our way in. He won't answer the door. He's not hurting anyone except your annoyance. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. So then we eventually, this took like at least a week, but eventually we convinced a judge that he's got some mental problems that needs to be taken care of. And so the county mental health deputy went and took care of it. And so we had the warrant for obviously misuse of 911.
Right.
But then the mental health hold. So when he did bail out of jail, he went straight to the hospital instead. So yeah, it was a happy ending for him. But during the middle of this week, I took a phone call from a 17-year-old kid. His brother proposed to his girlfriend, then asked her for a glass of water. And as soon as she walked out of the room, he shot himself in the head. And so I was teaching this 17-year-old how to do CPR.
Holy shit.
And yeah. And I mean, I know you know the feeling of, you know, this is CPR for show.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Helping you until...
Exactly.
Until the responders can get there. And so I take this call and it's just, you know, in the moment, it hurts. It sucks. But you're there and you're strong. And I hang up the phone. And then the very next call I took was this guy again. And... he is just going on and on. I'm like, you need to stop calling. And he tells me, oh, just go kill yourself. I'm like,
oh, you have no idea what I just took
yeah.
right before you called and told me that.
This
oh.
is just seconds later. And he says that.
God.
And so this isn't very appropriate, but I responded, I will if you stop calling. And then this was like early in the shift. By the end of the shift, he hadn't called once. We got off. I'm like, shit, guys, do I have to do it now?
Right.
Do I have to keep that promise?
Yeah, I don't really want to, but.
This is the longest we haven't heard from him, though, so it worked.
Yeah.
He did start calling again later, like the afternoon. That was an overnight shift. It was like the afternoon shift that he started again. I'm like, oh, I'm saved.
Right. I'm good to go. Oh, damn. Yeah, see, and that's one of the things, too, is when I talk to people, And I've said, you know, you have no idea, you know, what goes on in dispatch, or especially, you know, during phone calls and stuff where, you know, you've got phone calls that the media plays where it's just bad stuff that happens that dispatchers do or say or whatever. But I've always said there those snippets of audio are they're so strategically done where you can tell that it's cut. And it's not the whole thing. So a lot of times I wonder what happened right before that, because is that the entire call? Is that the entire audio? Because you can tell stuff is different. And not just that, but what happened before then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of call did that person take before then?
And what else is happening in the center?
Right. There's so many different things that happen that people don't understand. So that's why I love doing this, you know, to take the educational approach to show people there are many, many reasons about things that are said, done, or whatever. It's just a big, you know, way to learn throughout that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, on top of that, you've got, you know, all the stress and the, you know, the just the traumatic incidents the dispatchers are dealing with. And it's hard, you know, and people have to get those stories out there and they have to find a way to heal or find someone to talk to. And this kind of segues into your presentation as well, kind of.
A little bit.
With what you were doing. So tell me about this. Tell me, and my listeners here, you were part of a forum. It was called the Research Poster Forum, and you did a presentation during that piece. So some information on that.
So the center I worked for before switching to Westcom,
mm-hmm.
It didn't really have a future for me. There wasn't anything else to do. I didn't feel like my ideas of progress or anything were ever really being listened to. And so that kind of motivated me, like, well, I can keep doing this forever, which I liked my coworkers. I did like where I was. I liked the call types, the cities I worked for. They were fantastic. They were great. But I couldn't just sit there and do that forever. So I went and started both part-time at Westcom, and I went back to school to get my master's. So I had, like, less than no free time for quite a while.
And the master's is in?
Master's of Public Policy.
Gotcha.
So I went back for that, and I did it online. We did, like, every Monday for 3 hours, we would meet online in a classroom. And then it was like a cohort, so we went together through all the classes through the same thing. And finally, for the end, for my thesis, I decided that I wanted to study dispatcher CPR and the effectiveness of it. Because obviously we can say we make a difference. We get Lifesaver awards when we have a successful CPR and the patient lives.
Right.
We obviously help get hands on chest within seconds. So obviously we make a difference, but I want to be able to quantify that. How much of a difference do we make?
Right.
Out of how many calls that we do CPR on, how many people survive?
See, this is good because when I first started out dispatching in Florida, there was this stat that was given to us by our instructor that said that every time you do CPR, there's only a 5% chance of people that end up making it back from that. And I thought, damn, that's pretty low.
But from what I've learned through this whole experience is that cardiac arrest is much more survivable than we see it. And part of it is getting that education out and letting people know if you call 911 right away, we're going to help you through it. We're going to teach you how over the phone.
Right.
And we can help these people. I mean, obviously it's not like, oh, everyone gets to survive if they just get CPR.
Right.
It's still grim, but the 5% is really because places that are poor seem to have lower rates of CPR being done by bystanders. And then people don't know what to expect when they call 911. I don't remember who did this article, but it mentioned instead of teaching lay people CPR, obviously they should know how to do CPR,
right.
But we tell them, you call 911, you grab the AED.
I was just saying that exact same thing in my head. And I'm sure those who come from dispatch are probably saying that as well.
But no one teaches them what to expect after 911 is dialed.
Right.
No one teaches them that they're going to tell you to, you know, put your hands in between the nipples, press hard and fast 600 times.
Right.
So that part needs to be incorporated in what bystanders are being taught in their CPR classes. Because a lot of times, too, you don't have the two bystanders to say, hey, you go help with this and you go do this.
Right.
So you have the one person themselves on the phone with their shoulder up to their ear pounding on the chest. So getting these words out and getting these ideas in people's heads and showing that dispatch does make a difference is really what I want to do.
That's awesome. So how did the presentation go? I mean, was there a lot of people in there? And also from that, I mean, did you guys have like a Q&A as well during that time?
We did, but we didn't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
When I walked in and sat down, there were maybe like 10, 15 people in the room. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't too nervous. And then I got up and turned around and saw like the back behind me had filled. And I was like, I can do this.
Right.
So yes, that was my first public speaking event. I mean, I've done, you know, things around like my place. I did the training when we have all of our applicants come in and we tell them what it's about. We basically, it's kind of a scare the shit out of you session.
Yeah, you can go with that.
Yeah. We play three terrible calls that our center has taken,
mm-hmm.
and then we kind of talk about it and,
it's kind of like a civilian academy or open house or something like that.
A little bit. And so, yeah, I was invited to help with one of those. And that was really my first time. And I kind of maybe accidentally slipped the fuck word out once before everyone had signed the waiver saying, because the calls are bad enough that everyone that shows up has to sign a waiver saying that, like, if they get PTSD, they won't sue the city.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Hey, well, you know.
But I let the fuck word slip before the waiver, so whoops.
Oh, well.
Meh. I was explaining what you'll hear, and fuck is like the least bad thing you're going to hear.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah, there's a lot more that you're going to be hearing, yes, for sure.
Yeah, I kind of like made eye contact with my boss after that, like, sorry.
Yeah, am I okay? I still get to come in tomorrow, right?
HR, hey.
We're still friends. So are you going to be giving this session at other conferences that are coming up, or?
I haven't planned on it, but.
You should.
I can definitely work with some people. I don't know. I talked to, I can't remember her name. After I did my presentation, she mentioned names of Megan and some other people with the academy that would be more than willing to help me actually get this database that I want to create off the ground.
Yeah.
Because I need some like research board approvals, because the information that I want to access from a lot of places is guarded by HIPAA.
Oh, gotcha. And, yes.
Because you'd have to be
I know
to
what
tie.
That's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you ever need, you know, any help or anything, or if anyone who is listening, if you ever have any questions, you know, you can shoot an email to us, which I'll give, you know, afterwards. And, you know, you can get some help that way as well.
That would be great.
To continue that research.
Yeah. Starting as one person with this big dream is, I mean, I've gotten to freaking Navigator on it.
Like, yeah.
This is just
boom,
blowing my mind. Yeah. I was standing in my room at the window, just looking at everything. And I'm like, this is all because I went to school. This is all because I hated my last job so much that I went back to school. Like,
but it's awesome.
It is.
Yeah. You're reaping the benefits
really
off of it.
Yeah.
So
I'm so glad that I did. And I'm so glad that I didn't only help myself in this. Like, I have a chance to help the dispatch community and really the community, the citizens.
Right. Hey, yeah, exactly.
You're getting CPR out of this.
That's what it's all about, yeah.
Yeah.
So going into the wrap-up of this episode, I mean, what is it that you've learned here that you think, you know, any dispatcher, anybody who attends would get something out of, as well as what you're teaching that you hope that you're able to help spread out?
I think there's a lot of good resources here to learn about team building. I feel like almost every class that I've gone to just relates straight to that. I did one this morning about mentoring, and the biggest thing is building relationships with people, caring about them, where they come from, where they want to go. And it's not just turning out dispatchers and someone else that can do the job. You want to nurture them so they have a career in front of them too. So they have opportunities like I have to, you don't even have to go back to school to do it. Just apply yourself and go to trainings and develop. And I want to be able to help them that way too. And then other classes like the Great Casino Heist. I don't know if you heard about that session.
I don't think I did, no.
It basically taught you all the resources that you need to put together your own escape room so you can have all of your dispatchers together working on something. And I'm just so excited to take that back. I'm like,
very cool.
Yeah. Got so many ideas flowing. And
excellent.
I can't wait to play.
Well, thank you very much for being on this episode. I had a lot of fun. It was excellent talking to you. It's always good to do an episode like this where, you know, it just feels like you've known somebody for a long time and we're just talking back and forth. So thank you again for being on. And for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and this can be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's @901podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. There's a lot of stuff at the end.
Yeah. And, and, just keeps going.
Yeah, and this episode is presented by the IAED, also sponsored by Kim Turner LLC. Make sure to check them out. Dispatch, professional dispatch training for the next generation of 911. You can find them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as thekimturner.com. And as always, we are supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. This episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes and iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.